This portion of the show is brought to you by Kim Dawson at Nova Home Loans.
This is the Jeff Horovitz Show.
Okay, welcome everyone. Thanks for listening. Jeff Horovitz here. Angela with me for a bit this hour. Trying to cheer me up. I don't like April 15th. It is April 15th, also known as tax day, when you are supposed to pay your taxes by or file for an extension or do whatever maneuvers are necessary to survive in this record tax world we live in nowadays, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy. And Angela's, I don't know why I complain, because you do all the work.
I know, I did it all.
I mean, you do all the tax
work.
Well,
actually, I have to hire someone to do the heavy lifting. Yeah. But I do most of the prep, and then I have to deal with the fallout of the return.
Now we got to come up with this money to pay.
What really gets
the government.
You is like if you owe, it's due April 15th, but also that's your first quarterly payment for the new year.
And yeah, if you're self-employed like we are. Yeah.
So I have to pay every quarter, every 3 months.
Yeah, we don't. Look, I mean, a lot of people get W-2s.
Yeah.
A lot of people are also self-employed. We have to pay it in lump sums and estimate what it's going to be or get penalized and charged extra. Yeah.
Right. So I have to make the quarterly payment and the tax due today.
Ooh, it's ugly.
And if we make any contributions for anything, it's also due today. So
yeah, it's all due.
But I've done it all. I'm good.
Ignore my grumpiness over the whole thing, because you see what they're doing. You see what they're doing, and how did they get this so out of hand?
Yeah.
And I do this every year. This would be the eighth year of me going over tax numbers and what the government's doing. And in 8 years, it's exploded as far as tax revenue collected, expenditures. I mean, I would imagine when we started the show that the federal expenditure was under $4 trillion, probably around $3.5 trillion. Now it's like six, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't even know. I spent time researching this for you guys, right? Like looking up, like, how much tax revenues are coming in versus when the tax system came into play in 1913, you know, and this and that. And I was like, just started rounding things. I used to really get uptight about, let me find the most accurate number. It's like, I don't think there is an accurate number anymore.
Right, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I think they're all making stuff up. I don't even think, when they say they're spending $6 trillion, I figure it's probably $8 trillion.
Do they really know?
Do they really know?
I mean, how could you?
Does anybody know at this point? So anyway, I'm going to go over some of that with you, because we need to every tax time.
Well, the issue
to show you what's going on in this country,
that the W-2 employee that gets their check every 2 weeks, taxes already withdrawn.
Yeah.
Sure, they see the amount on their W-2 wage statement or in the tax returns that yes, I'm paid X amount in federal tax or whatever.
Yeah, they see the pay stub.
But you
whatever,
don't
yeah.
feel the pain of,
oh, they feel
of like writing out the. The check, though.
It's they do feel it because they're getting less money.
No, but it's different than, you know, let's just say for rounding's sake, you know, make $5,000 and you got to pay $500 to the government.
In one shot.
They don't get the $5,000 and then have to write a check for $500 out of it. The $500 is already withdrawn. So it's like they don't see it.
They do feel it. Let me stop you there. But I wish that we did go back to the old way, and the government was smart in doing this, is by the employer taking out the money. It does seem a little less, but it's still the same. Don't get me wrong there, but they're not feeling that same impact as when you write the whole check all at once. I get what you're saying, removed from having to do the lump sum like I do every 3 months. We might, and I've argued this for years, we should go back to the lump sum and election day on the same day.
Yeah.
Everybody should show up on April 15th and say, okay, I made $50,000 this year, and the federal government wants to squeeze $5,000 out of me, or $20,000, whatever it is. I don't know. I do actually have the scales here. And then you vote for these ding-dongs.
Yeah, I know.
Right after you write the freaking check. Because they're robbing they're robbing business owners, self-employed, and they're robbing people that are employed, that are getting W-2s, that are getting paychecks and getting money taken out every 2 weeks. But they're doing it to them a little differently. And then they're also, something that a lot of people don't realize is the employer matches that Social Security.
Right.
Seven odd percent.
Yeah.
I know. So, and that's a huge thing right there that people don't take into effect. And meanwhile, the whole thing's bankrupt. The whole thing is bankrupt.
My point is just that when it's done out of your check, it's not the same. And so people don't, especially on the younger end, don't even tend to
They're not out there protesting it because it's
already gone. It was never in their pocket to begin with, really. And so the urge to change it for some reason.
Nobody's protesting.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was first working, I was like, who's this FICA person?
Yeah. I mean, you just look at the front of the check, how much your check is for and how much is going in your account. Not necessarily the.
All right. Well, you guys send an email comments because I think you'll get a few for those comments. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com.
No, I'm just iCloud.com. It won't change when
I hear you. We're all getting robbed. At this point, that's the reality of
it. They do it in a stealthy way, though.
And they do it through inflation as well. They do it through the stealth inflation by the cost of everything being much more. And everybody thought they got the free stuff. And meanwhile, you're paying for it through increased prices of anything. Okay, let's get to the numbers here. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. Remember Timberline Firearms and Training, just 5 minutes north of the Flagstaff Mall, where you can get training when it comes to firearms. You know, they've got the first shots program, intermediate handgun training. They've also got Stop the Bleed. They do that once a month. Go out there, get great training. Rob and his great team, Rob and Elise Wilson, do an awesome job. 928-526-7900. That's 928-526-7900. Plus, great indoor shooting range. They got firearms out there, ammunition, safes, you name it. Head on out there. Rob's really concerned about ammunition shortages possibly coming up. So, hey, you might want to take advantage of this time right now. We can still get some good stuff. Go out to Timberline Firearms and Training, 5 minutes north of the Flagstaff Mall. Okay, check out these numbers, Angela. So, first of all, we got this wonderful tax day and the federal income tax in 1913. With the 16th Amendment, and then that allowed the feds to do federal income tax. We did have some federal income tax in periods in the times past, like during the Civil War, but then they actually went away and kind of came back a little bit, went away. But we never had anything like this that went into effect in 1913, where there was this federal tax code, the IRS, all that stuff, and it's never gone away since, and it's just gotten worse. In 1914, if you were married and filing jointly, the tax brackets, here they are. If you were zero to 20,000, you're at 1%. 1%. There's no this. The guy FICA and the other people, they weren't there. 1%. 1%. Mm-hmm. Then you had $20,000 to $50,000. You were into 2%. Then it went to 3% at 50 to 75. 75 to 100 went to 4. 100 to 250,000. That was some serious money back then.
Yeah.
$100,000, sure. $250,000 back then. You were making multiple millions of a year as compared to today. You get up to 5%, then 6%. And then the highest tax bracket back in 1914, filing joint married, if you made over $500,000, you're paying 7%.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So now, 2020, well, this is 2023's ratings. You make 10%. I'm sorry. You make $0 up to 11,000. You pay 10%. Then it goes to 12%, 22% if you make 44,000, 24% if you make 95,000, 32% if you make 182,000 or more, 35% at 231, 37% is the top tax bracket at $578,000 or more. 37%. So we started off at 1%. And now we're at 37%. And the top, okay, top tax bracket in 1914 was 7. 7 for the same amount, though. 500,000, which was millions back then, you were paying 7%. Now you make $578,000, 37% you get taxed. Plus Social Security.
Right.
Plus local taxes, state taxes. Plus property taxes, plus taxes when you go out to the store. A lot of places even charge grocery taxes, mm-hmm. rental taxes, you name it. You get hammered.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah. From amazing. Every angle.
Amazing. But nobody's protesting it. They're out protesting this weekend, actually. I saw there's protesters in Flagstaff and down in Phoenix over the abortion issue. Mm. There's people lined up to protest the abortion decision, but nobody's protesting the taxes. Nobody's protesting. Maybe it's because they don't notice. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. I don't know.
I just, you know, that's what I think is.
Yeah, maybe they're not.
It is a lot different if the money goes into your account and then you have to write a check to the United States Treasury for
out of that same account.
X amount, and then the money leaves your account. Yeah. That is a lot different than your check. Just you get whatever is on the printed on the front, and that's what you get.
It is funny. The federal government, they get paid first. Before you even get your check, the money was withdrawn and it's gone. They got their money first. But yeah, nobody out there protesting when we have record taxes being collected, record debt. We're getting close to $35 trillion. I pulled up a few other stats here too. In 1913, when they started the IRS and the federal tax code as it exists now, but much less percentages, they were collecting 3% of versus GDP. I couldn't find a GDP number, but I found that it was 3%. So the federal government was operating on 3%. Mm-hmm. They took in 3%. They spent 3%. 1913, 2023, where'd that number go? 36%. That's how much government is spending. 36% of the GDP mm-hmm. is going towards that's a minimum. I've seen numbers. If you include local, state, and federal and local, state, and federal all together, it's closer to 40-50%, depending on which year mm-hmm. and what you're looking at. So we've gone from creation of the tax code and paying these taxes, 3% of GDP, to minimum 36% of GDP being spent on all this stuff. Yeah. Insane. Let's see, any other factoids here? Yeah, 34. Oh, and back in 1900, that's the closest number I could find, we were at 4% of debt to GDP. So the debt equaled 4% of the actual GDP. Now it's 110%. We're doing good. We're doing good. So pay your taxes, I guess. Pay your taxes. And then they are totally out of control in Congress. I saw that they have turned down the Biggs Amendment. Congressman Andy Biggs right here in Arizona, and I have a message to get him on the program hopefully this week. We shall see. He floated an amendment to the FISA thing where they can, you know, look at what citizens are doing without a warrant and do the phone taps and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And if you're overseas, and he tried to get it that you have to get a warrant if they're an American citizen, and mm-hmm. it failed by like one vote. So they were retrying that today. Mm-hmm. Somebody switched their vote procedurally last minute so that they could vote no and then have the right to bring it back up or something like that. Uh-huh. So we're going to see if that'll actually pass.
Yeah. Not surprising.
Not surprising at all. Anyway, there were protests over the abortion issue in Flagstaff and in Phoenix. But like I said, none over the debt, none over the taxes, none over the inflation. As you watched this weekend, we had the issues with the Middle East going on, which, you know, what a difference a week makes. Last week we were talking about the eclipse on Monday's program. Yeah. Now we had all these rockets and all these missiles, drones shooting over from Iran to Israel. And Israel claims that they shot down with the help of the U.S. and UK and I believe it was France and Jordan, 99% of those drones and rockets. Mm-hmm. So that's good.
Yeah.
So that happened, and we'll see. Now we're just on a kind of edge of our seats because now Israel says they're going to respond, and Iran says, well, if you do, we're going to respond again. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happens there, but it's kind of scary watching all this.
I know. Yeah, that's not good.
That's not good at all.
The fact that they're even talking about a retaliation is kind of worrying.
All right. I do have Paul Tice coming up, so stick around for that second hour of the show program. He's the author of The Race to Zero. He's talking about ESGs, how ESG investing will crater the global financial system. That's going to be hour two of the show. I lied to you on Friday or Thursday. I can't remember when I told you that we're going to have Senator Wendy Rogers. We've actually moved her interview to Wednesday's program. So mm-hmm. Senator Wendy Rogers will give a big update this week as well to let us know what's going on down at the Arizona State Legislature. Also, what's going on with the abortion issue. There's a push by some to repeal the 1864 abortion law that's now in place, or will be in place, I should say, should be in place coming up here in just over a week, which outlaws all abortion in pretty much every case. And we get an update from her on that, plus the budget, and then her bill on the squatters, this squatter issue that we're seeing in some places in the country. We'll see what she's, I think that's her bill actually, so we'll see what she says about that. Hey, if you get a rock chip in your windshield, remember to call Diamond Auto Glass first. So get that rock chip repaired before it spreads to the rest of your windshield. Call them up at 928-779-4140. If you need a whole new windshield, they'll take care of that for you as well. Plus, then you get a full warranty. You get free rock chip repair, no appointment necessary. Again, call Diamond Auto Glass at 928-779-4140 or go to thedifferenceisclear.com. Okay, a couple of Arizona issues. The Prescott Habitat for Humanity. I saw this multiple places. I'm looking at an article from KJZZ, which I think is the public radio. And I figure since it is tax day and public radio gets so much of our funding, our dollars, you know, to mm-hmm. run a radio station, mm-hmm. we don't get that public money or anything, do we? Did you get that check? No, I didn't see that check. So we might as well at least steal some of their stuff here, right? Well, I'll give them credit, but hey, they got our money, so probably paying for it anyway. Anyway, the former executive director of the Prescott area Habitat for Humanity has been accused of stealing $400,000 from the organization.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, no small. I'm just trying to think of, like, I've been to the Habitat for Humanity, like in Flagstaff, and they've got, like, you've been in there, right? It's like furniture.
The resale store.
Yeah, right? Yeah, uh-huh. And they build homes,
they build
right?
homes, too.
Yeah. I'm sure they do a lot of good, but, mm-hmm. I mean, this ain't shining a good light on anything. You know, it's one area, I guess.
$400,000
in cash? I don't know. Huh. No, I guess over a seven-year period. 60-year-old Karen Northcutt was arrested on suspicion of stealing, allegedly, from the charity over a seven-year period from 2017 to 2024. Prescott Times reported that the organization received an anonymous tip about this in February. Hmm. How do you get $400,000, though? I mean, how's that? Like, you have a board.
Well, yeah, I don't know how they couldn't notice that being, you know, over 7 years. What is that, 50 a year, approximately?
Where's 50? Where's this? How can that? What's going on here? Yeah.
Yeah.
How'd that fly? How'd that slide, you know? Because it's like you're selling, I know at their restores, and I don't know if they have one of those down there. I'm just going by, I've been to, like, restores and other
communities. Yeah, it's like a secondhand, you know, donated stuff.
Got donated stuff. There's an old desk. Mm-hmm. The file cabinet is a refrigerator for $100. Yeah, just a kind of, it's secondhand stuff, you know? It's like you can find stuff, you rummage through, but we're not talking high value items here.
No, but maybe this is a different.
Then maybe they get money from organizations to build those because they do the mm-hmm. homes and this and that. That's a shame. You know, if the allegations, they go to court and everything happens here, I mean, what the heck?
Yeah, anytime something like that happens with any kind of charity, it makes people leery of donating again, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe, to any charities.
Yeah, to anyone, but that one in particular. And
yeah.
But then, yeah, they become skeptical of other ones, too, and they start to question, well, what are they doing with my money that I'm wanting to give?
Yeah, what the heck's going on?
And
here?
I think there's quite a few of them do have their, you know, balance sheet type things online so people can view and how much is going to corporate, you know, the admin and stuff like that versus how much is actually being given to people in our community. You know, is it 10% or is it 80%?
Well, some of them, you know, the national ones, you're shocked. I don't know the number offhand, so I don't want to mention it, but some of them you're like, really, 20, 30, 40, 50% to admin costs? And you're like,
oh,
well,
sometimes more than that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, why am I doing this? Yeah, I might as well find somebody and try to help them myself.
Your $100 or your $1,000 or whatever, whatever it may be,
you
know, someone locally at least.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
but I think that there are quite a few of them that do have, especially the big ones, have documents online where you can see
where the money's going and
how much is going to the cause and not just the.
Yeah. Am I spending 90% to give some administrators a job or, mm-hmm. you know, what's mm-hmm. the deal here?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll keep an eye on that one. Another legal one here, I guess the gun supervisor for that Rust TV series. Remember the shooting, the Alec Baldwin thing, the mm-hmm. death? The person who was in charge of the armory, I guess, Hannah Gutierrez Reed, was convicted back in March, but she got sentenced today for, or sentenced just the other day, 18 months. in prison for involuntary, what they call it, involuntary manslaughter. So
because she was in charge for loading
the firearms, I guess. And this and that. Yeah, I mean, he was ultimately responsible for the pointing
for
it, but
pulling the trigger. But yeah. But she was
the one
had
that
control
was,
of it.
She's
before
the
that.
Armorer. Yeah. So she got that. The Golden Gate Bridge was shut down. Yeah. Weren't we talking about a bill here in Arizona like a week or two ago that's, I think, Governor Hobbs vetoed, where protesters can't shut down like freeways and bridges? And mm-hmm. she vetoed the thing because, you know, that's they have the right, I guess, to go onto bridges and block traffic and cause general mayhem, right, under the First Amendment, which I don't think they do if you screw up everyone else's life because you're
right.
out there protesting. There's
you
plenty
have
of
the
places.
Right to protest, but you don't have the right to impede traffic
exactly.
and other
there's,
people's
there's plenty of
daily
reasonable
lives,
places
yeah.
to protest. But these protesters earlier today shut down. Can you imagine what a nightmare this was on Monday? The Golden Gate Bridge. They shut down both lanes of traffic.
Really?
Yeah.
Shut what were down. They protesting?
Gaza. Israeli, war in Gaza. It was, quote, stop the world for Gaza. So they stopped the Golden Gate Bridge and end the siege on Gaza right now. So they decided to shut down the bridge so they can stop the world for Gaza.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And in California, they're probably allowed to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you wonder if they're going to be like, are they throwing them over the bridge? I don't think so. You know, this is, they probably get nothing. There's probably no ramifications. No. But what if there's like emergency vehicles? What if there's
because that area where San Francisco is very isolated. It's only accessible by bridges, really.
A couple
I
bridges,
mean, besides
yeah.
there's, you know, from the southern end, you can come in by land, but the other areas is only by bridge. So, I think they have a subway, some kind of train
tunnel
subway system
yeah.
under the water. But
well, imagine if someone was going like a heart was flown into like Oakland, like a transplant. And they had to get into San Francisco for someone.
Oh,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? To see who the heck yeah. knows what's coming through there. That's mm-hmm. people are relying on making or just general. I'm trying to get to work. It's tax day. I got to pay my taxes.
Yeah.
Trying to get to work here. Yeah. So they shut that thing down. Okay, one more. No, we got to take a break. All right, love to hear from you. talkwithjeff@icloud.com. That's talkwithjeff@icloud.com. Don't forget, we do have Paul Tice in the second hour, author of The Race to Zero, How ESG Investing Will Crater the Global Financial System. More good news. More good news on a Monday there. Definitely. All right. Let's see here. American Trailer Company is the place where I bought our great dump trailer, which Angela drove last week quite a bit and loaded up mulch and then dumped it.
Yeah, I did.
Did a good job. I took her like one or two times. I was like, here's how this thing works. And I was like, you're on your own. She went and loaded it up. They loaded her up and she came back, dumped it. I spread it out. American Trailer, that's how this is. And she doesn't have tons of trailer experience.
No.
Some. Some.
Well, a little bit, just our camper. And
yeah, it drives. Yeah. This thing drives great.
It's good.
So they've got the flatbed trailers, the dump trailers. They got cargo trailers, those smaller utility trailers, too, if you just need for smaller yard work, things like that. So basically from yard work all the way up to you're a contractor or something, you don't need to go to Phoenix. Just go 5 minutes north of the Flagstaff Mall to American Trailer Company. And this month, take advantage of this. If you've been on the fence and you want to get a great trailer and you want to save a little bit of money, I can get you 6% off. 6% off at American Trailer Company. You just got to mention J.O. Show when you go in there. J.O. Show, get 6% off. This is just through April, so go take care of this real quick. Get that trailer. You know you've been waiting. AmericanTrailerAZ.com. That's AmericanTrailerAZ.com. Hey, if you're listening to the podcast, please give us a great review and also give us a comment in there. If you're not listening to the podcast, subscribe. Look up the Jeff Orbit Show. Also on video, Rumble, follow us there. And on YouTube, subscribe. We appreciate everyone who's done that.
You're listening to the Jeff Orbit Show.
When you call the Blind Brothers for blind shutters or shades, you're going to work directly with them. Plus, all their great combined experience, never with subcontractors. I know because I'm a client of the Blind Brothers. They're going to lay out all your options, not just the most expensive ones that fit your style and your budget. Right now, you can get half off installation. Just mention the Jeff Orbit Show when you call. Do your neighbors a favor. Call for a free estimate right now at 928-634-2423. That's 928-634-2423, or go to theblindbrothers.com. This portion of the show is brought to you by Sportsman's Bar and Grill. All right, welcome back. Jeff Orbit's here. Angela is here with me, and it's tax day, so not in the best of moods. Nobody should be, especially how they're wasting our money like never. They're wasting our money in record numbers. So we like to point that every time, every year, eighth year in a row here, pointing out the insanity in Washington, D.C. Second hour, you got Paul Tice, who's the author of The Race to Zero, How ESG Investing Will Crater the Global Financial System. And I've got Wendy Wright. We said we're going to have her Monday. We're going to have her interview on Wednesday and hit on what's going on at the Arizona legislature, get you all caught up on the abortion issue, the budget, and things like squatting. You know, people going into your people's houses and just kind of taking them over. You know, normal stuff that we didn't have to deal with just a couple years ago. But welcome to America 2024, I guess, and Bidenomics, right? Yeah. It's going rosy. Let's see here. I want to get to our movie that we saw this weekend, but let me hit on something. We went and saw the Civil War. But hang on real quick. I didn't realize this, but Williams has an election coming up.
Okay.
Right? I should have known this. I mean, every 2 years they have new council members coming in, a new mayor, I guess. But I didn't realize that. I saw this on Williams News, and I talk to him every month or two. The former mayor of Williams, Mayor John Moore, he's running again. He had
for mayor?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he took a little time off. I think he ran for
CD1 or something.
CD1? No.
I think so.
Something. He ran for something else.
Yeah, it was that.
Okay.
Or well, he did.
I'll get him back on the program. I guess he's running against the current incumbent. This guy must be one term, Don Dent.
Yeah.
And then let's see. They've got, according to city clerk Pam Galvin, incumbent Don Dent and former mayor John Moore filed as candidates for mayor. And then they've got for how many seats? Three council seats. Scott Burrell, Larry Michael Hastings, Thomas Kennelly, Cameron Mayabby, Frank McNeely, and Chris Sadler, and John Sedeker are running to fill three council seats. They got a lot of people running.
Yeah, that's good, a good list there.
So then they got a primary July 30th. So we know that's happening there. We know Flagstaff has a big election. Prescott had theirs, I think. They already did that. I could be wrong, though. If you know about your local elections, you got to send it in. Yeah. I just can't keep track of them all. But yeah, we'll get Mayor John Moore back on the program as well. One more. The Biden administration, because they've got your tax money and they want to spend it, talked about last week how the Taiwan semiconductor company is getting however many tens of billions of dollars in tax incentives, basically U.S. taxpayers putting money in to subsidize their big chip manufacturing plant in Phoenix.
It was something like they were going to put in $25 billion and they were getting something like 11 or, it was something like that.
It was a good deal.
In like people chipping in, you know, from the government and the city or whatever.
It was for the feds. It's from the...
Was it all from them?
No, it's from the CHIPS Act. It was like one of Cinema's babies or something. It was either $1 trillion or $1.2 trillion. Really hard to keep track of anymore. Who even knows how much they actually spend in the end? Because I don't think the numbers are particularly accurate. Yes, this was last Monday we were talking about. This was Taiwan Semiconductor was planning on doing a third manufacturing facility in Phoenix, a third $25 billion plant in Arizona, totaling $65 billion. And they were going to get, the company is getting $11.6 billion. So they are investing $25 billion, but they're actually investing, like $13 or $14 billion. And then they're getting the other 11 from the taxpayers to build the semi. This is a $60 billion company. Something like that. It's a huge multinational Taiwanese company. So you put in the money and then they build the chips, you know, but they do it. Why do they need our money? What you couldn't get that to run your business, right?
Yeah, that's what we were talking about last week.
There's another one. There's another one. So this one is in Texas. Samsung. Where's that out of? Is that Korean or is that Japanese? I think it's Japanese. Samsung is getting $6.4 billion to put a chip manufacturing facility in Texas. This is great. How do we get in on this stuff? I gotta figure this out. If you're on it, so if you're a multinational, multi-billion-dollar company, you get on this in a big way. If you're on the lower end of the income scale in the United States of America, I guess you can get like SNAP or something like that.
Yeah.
And if you're in the middle, which a lot of you listening are, you don't get jack.
No.
You just gotta pay. Just open up. It's April 15th and pay your taxes and shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
We know what's
get
best for you.
Get your checkbook out.
Get your checkbook out. If you still got a checkbook,
it's just a figure of speech.
Yeah, it's a figure of speech. Angela did get the checkbook out, though. Okay, so we went and saw the movie Civil War. You've all heard of it.
Jeff's been waiting for this moment just to make fun of me.
This is so, you know, usually on a weekend, we're down in Camp Verde and I'm like working outside. Owen and I are messing around outside. The kids are messing around outside and getting right now this time of year. I'm like, I want to get stuff planted. We had to come back up. Why did we come back? Oh, we had
because
to pick up the kids.
Our kids were coming home Friday night.
That's right. So the kids were, you know, gone last week on school trip, one in Phoenix, one in California. And I guess they were arriving Friday night, so we had to come back up to Flagstaff.
To pick them up.
And normally we're down there, right? So I'm kind of like, you know, Saturday morning, I'm used to being outside early working, and, you know, I've already done several mowings down in Camp Verde. I'm just kind of active and outside, so I'm getting kind of antsy, right? You could sense it.
Yeah.
I'm like just wandering around, like, what do I do?
Well, yeah, and it's like, it was kind of windy, and it's windy, not that nice
nasty out.
Yeah, so...
So
I suggest, why don't we go out and do something?
Let's go do something. Like,
I don't
like
know, maybe
what?
A movie or
she's
something.
She's like, a movie. Okay, let's go see a movie. I was like, last movie we saw was like Nefarious, or maybe it was
like
Indiana Jones.
Ago.
Yeah, we get to the movies once a year, it seems. We
once
used to
or
go,
twice, maybe.
Yeah, in our younger days, we'd go all the time.
Yeah.
Last time we went, it was like $5. Now it's 10.
For a matinee.
The matinee was $10, and the popcorn, it was worth it, though. I mean, me and Angela went and spent $26 on two tickets and some popcorn. We smuggled in the drinks, though. Don't tell Harkins. I refused. I was like, I'm not buying their
$3 refill.
$8 loyalty cup or six, whatever that thing is, and then $3 refills.
Yeah.
Like, nope. So anyway, I did get the popcorn, though. So I was like, well, let's go see Civil War. I mean, that sounds like that'll cheer us up on a Saturday on a windy day. So we go there, and we're just hanging out. There's not a lot of people in there. And it's what time, 3:30 matinee, 4:30, 3:30, something like that. And the movie starts and Angela looks at me and like, we can't be what, like 30 seconds into this movie.
Yeah. Something like that.
Something like that. Right. And she whispers to me, this isn't about the actual Civil War. That's a quote. I wrote it down. I pulled out my phone, even though they tell you not to do that. Right. Keep your phone away. I like write this quote down, quote, and I quote, here's what Angela said as the movie starts, and they have, and I'll try not to spoil anything on there if you're planning to see it, but in the beginning they have the president of the United States kind of rehearsing in front of a mirror.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Hang on. Let me do my part.
Say,
and you can
it
protest.
Is not about the actual Civil War, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I'm getting there.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. And, you know, this president in modern times, or it's like in the future or something, right? Not like, it's like next year. Anyway, he's like in rehearsing in front of his mirror to talk to the Americans about how the federal government is doing so good. And it's, you know, we're beating the rebels basically, which was a load of crap. Mm-hmm. Right. And, so she sees that this isn't like Abe Lincoln, right?
Yeah.
And
I was waiting for Lincoln to come out.
She actually whispers, this isn't about the actual Civil War. And I just start laughing. And everyone's like, you're watching a somber movie and you're cracking up. I could tell, you know, it's like, I'm cracking.
I couldn't help it. It was
I couldn't
so
hold
funny.
It in. She didn't even know what the movie was about. She thought it was about like
I did.
Civil War, like Abraham Lincoln and, you know, Lee and all
I
that.
I had no idea. I don't look at movies. I don't pay attention to the entertainment industry really at all.
Yeah.
And I went in there and yeah, I was waiting for Lincoln to come out and
Lincoln did not come out.
Yeah. At the very beginning I was like,
maybe
okay, this is not 1860s. And then I was thinking, well, maybe they're going to like, you know, go back and I didn't know. And Jeff didn't tell me. He's just like, we're going to go see Civil War. I thought it was about the Civil War. I mean, he likes historical things. And
yeah, this was future history, maybe.
Yeah, well,
hopefully
2 days
not.
Ago, you're talking about Napoleon. And, you know, and then before that, it was the Ottoman Empire. I mean, you liked historical things. So It's like, okay, whatever.
And also just like a good disaster flick once in a while. And this was a disaster.
So anyway, I quickly realized that this was supposedly a present day Civil
Modern
War.
Day, yeah.
I was like,
American Civil War.
Wait a second. This isn't about the actual Civil War? Because that's what I was waiting for. And yeah, I had to, that was legit. Like I had no clue.
She had no clue. So
no clue.
Anyway, we saw it. I think it's worth seeing to hopefully plant a seed that we don't want a civil war. Although I don't want to spoil anything at the end. So I think some people are like, "Huh, okay." That's an outcome that I can live with. I think some people could live, or that's the feeling that everyone that was there, you could just kind of see, huh? There wasn't like cries or anything. And again, I don't want to give anything away. But basically, the movie is about, and I'm not spoiling anything here if you've seen the preview, which Angela obviously didn't, is journalists that like photojournalists and true journalists, which we really don't have too much of anymore, following and getting hooked up with the rebel forces from Texas and California, which is totally kind of bunk and bogus that Texas and California would ever kind of enlist together because they're so far apart. But I think that the writer and the director were trying to be like, they tried to make it where it wasn't a left-right thing as best they could. It was just a federal government that was jacked up and corrupt, which is pretty much not a left-right thing. It's pretty much both of them, both sides at this point, Democrats and Republicans, pretty jacked up. So, you know, they get in bed with these rebels who are advancing on Washington, D.C., and they go along with them the whole way, and it looks freaking real. Right? I mean, it was like, wow, how did they, I mean, there's a battle scene in DC.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So if you're into that type of movie, it's worth, I think, a watch. It's not a happy movie though, but if you're into kind of adrenaline, kind of the whole way through kind of war footage, but you know, imposed over maybe a future, and hopefully a future we don't want to see here. But man, DC is so jacked up, and you're just like, you could see in this movie how they got so fed up, and it led to this eventually.
Yeah.
Whew, it was intense.
Yeah.
It was intense.
I liked it though. It's not what I thought it was going to be, but you know,
clearly.
I mean, once I, figured that out.
Yeah. Clearly.
Yeah.
It was a little different than she thought. And yeah, there was no Abe Lincoln. And I can't say anything else because I don't want to spoil it, though. But they did a good job. They built up Jesse Plemons as being in this, but I will spoil that. He isn't in it for very long.
I don't even know who that is.
The guy from Breaking Bad and Friday Night Lights. You don't know that either?
No.
He's got the blonde hair. He wore the red glasses.
No.
Okay. Well, anyway. We got to get out more.
Maybe you need to take me to more movies.
I guess so. I mean, I think there's
then I would have seen a preview or something.
I think there's a new Jurassic Park movie out, but, you know, just no. I don't surprise you.
The dinosaurs eat them.
Oh, yeah, there are dinosaurs. And I saw they were making a new Twister, and I was like, why?
Oh, yeah.
Why do we need a new Twister?
Another one.
Yeah, do we really need another one of these? But that was in the preview, too. Anyway, love to hear from you. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. Worth seeing, I guess, if you're into those types of movies. Get a great pizza at the Marco's Pizza, voted best pizza and wings in Flagstaff. We love it there. We love their lunch, too. They got great lunch specials. They start at 11 a.m., go to 11 to 2, right?
I think
so. For the lunch specials. And you can usually get like a couple slices and a drink, or a slice and a salad and a drink. You're in it a little over $10 at this point. That's a good deal.
That's not bad.
I mean, I'm seeing lunches for single people, you know, if you're just eating by yourself, $20 at a lot of places.
Yeah. Or at least 15, and then you got
at least 15.
Maybe a tip on top. And
You go to the Marco's Pizza, get a great pizza, great wings. They also have, you know, if you're going at dinner time, I guess lunchtime too, they've got great craft beers. They've got wine by the bottle or by the glass, you know. I don't know about lunch, but head on out there with your family. Head on out there and have a great time at one of their three locations at Namarco's Pizza. Or order online at namarcospizza.com. That's namarcospizza.com. Back in a minute. Hey, you're listening to the podcast, please give us a great review and also give us a comment in there. If you're not listening to the podcast, subscribe. Look up the Jeff Horvitz Show. Also on video, Rumble, follow us there. And on YouTube, subscribe. We appreciate everyone who's done that.
This is the Jeff Horvitz Show.
All right, I've got author Paul Tice coming up. The book is called The Race to Zero. That sounds like fun. And how ESG investing will crater the global financial system. That among 10 other things, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right? So we'll hit on that. I think Olivia will swing by, too. We'll see if we've got time at the end of the show. Get some of your comments in. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. Hang tight. More to come. Back in just a minute. The information provided on the Jeff Horvitz Show does not constitute legal, medical, financial, or tax advice. All information is the opinions of the host and guests. You should always seek the advice of a professional regarding any of these complex issues to make sure all circumstances of your situation are properly considered. Hey, if you're listening to the podcast, please give us a great review and also give us a comment in there. If you're not listening to the podcast, subscribe. Look up the Jeff Horvitz Show. Also on video, Rumble, follow us there. And on YouTube, subscribe. We appreciate everyone who's done that.
This is the Jeff Horvitz Show.
This is Jeff Horvitz, and if you listen to my show, you know that I recently had the blinds replaced in my house. And when we decided to get this done, obviously we called my friends at the Blind Brothers, and we weren't going to deal with anybody else because this is a great Northern Arizona company. They don't use subcontractors, so you know who you're dealing with. Now, the Blind Brothers came in. They laid out all the options for us. We picked out, my wife Angela and I, a great set of blinds. They gave us a great price. We opted to have them do the installation, which they can do for up to half off the price, as well as any other advertised specials. It's a great deal. They came in, they took out all the old blinds, got rid of them, hung the new blinds. They work perfect. We are very, very happy. I want you to do your neighbors a favor. Call the Blind Brothers for a free estimate at 928-634-2423. I know you're going to be happy. That's 928-634-2423. Or go online. They have great monthly specials at theblindbrothers.com. Call Diamond Auto Glass first before making an auto glass claim. Here's why. Most insurance companies use a nationwide glass shop to answer their calls, and they're going to try and route you to their shop, which may very well delay the time it takes to replace your glass. When you get a rock chip in your windshield, stop by Diamond Auto Glass as soon as possible. Repairing a chip will stop it from spreading and save you from a costly windshield replacement. If you've replaced your windshield with Diamond Auto Glass, you have a lifetime chip repair warranty and no appointments necessary. Just stop on by on 4th Street in Flagstaff, and most chip repairs take about 10 to 15 minutes. Always call Diamond Auto Glass first at 928-779-4140. That's 928-779-4140, or go to thedifferenceisclear.com. This portion of the show is brought to you by Diamond Auto Glass, where thedifferenceisclear.com.
This is the Jeff Horvitz Show.
All right, welcome back. Hour two of the show. Jeff Horvitz here. Happy to be here with you today, even though it's tax day, April 15th. I went over it last hour. I won't hit you again with the numbers and how much you're paying in taxes and how much things have changed since 1913. Listen to the back to the podcast, the beginning of the show. It's ridiculous, though, with everything going on, the amounts, the debt levels. We're close to $35 trillion. Insane stuff there. Listen back to the podcast in just a second. We're going to talk with Paul Tice, The Race to Zero, How ESG Investing Will Crater the Global Financial System. We'll get to that in a minute. Hey, if you want to get a great steak, head on out to Williams. I love going on out to Williams. It's a great place, great old Western feel there. Stop by the Rodeo Steakhouse. They've got great T-bone steaks. They've got their salt and pepper steak is awesome. They've got great ribs. If you're a chicken person, well, they got something for you there too. And salmon, trout, check it out. The Rodeo Steakhouse right there in Williams, 950 North Grand Canyon Boulevard by the Ramada Inn. All right, love to hear from you. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. That's talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. Let's welcome to the program Paul Tice. He's the author of the book, The Race to Zero, How ESG Investing Will Crater the Global Financial System. Paul, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
This is just like one more thing that could potentially crater the global financial system. I mean, we could probably put this on a list of 20 other things at least.
Yeah, it's a growing list between, you know, the economic problems we have in this country and the border and geopolitics. But this one's kind of a creeping one that I think is not that transparent to everybody.
Yeah. Well, I've hit on this a lot over the years, and it did kind of creep up on us like a lot of things. And we're like, where did this come from? What is this? Why don't you start with that? Break down, even I know a lot of people have heard this, but break down what ESG investing is to start off with, Paul.
Sure. So ESG stands for environmental, social, governance, and these are factors, non-financial in nature, that the argument goes you should use to set company policy and drive your investment decisions as opposed to objective financial metrics. And it's all predicated on the theory of stakeholder capitalism, which says that you need to run your companies for the good of society as opposed to for the capital providers, for the owners, and for the employees. So it's not really capitalism. It's closer to fascism. And it's been pushed on the market aggressively over the last decade. But you can really trace its history going back at least to the 80s, because the United Nations is the main force behind ESG investing, just as they are with climate change and sustainable development. So all three are, you know, legs of the same stool, if you will.
How they get, I mean, I'm sure they laid the groundwork, kind of like our education system, how that's gotten crazy, but it didn't happen overnight. It kind of seemed like it happened overnight, but it was decades in the making. So you mentioned the 1980s with ESG investing. Did they get people on these corporate boards and slowly kind of work it in inch by inch? How did this process happen?
Yeah, I mean, it's very similar to how all the other, you know, institutions in society have kind of been taken over by the progressive left over the last several decades. I would argue that the financial markets and Wall Street are kind of the last pillar to go, and ESG is kind of a vehicle for the takedown, if you will. But it's been slow. It's been insidious. I think since the crisis in 2008, there have been great inroads made by ESG because it allows Wall Street firms in particular to signal that they're virtuous, right? And that really was the requirement coming out of the crisis, given the bad reputation that the industry had. So everyone kind of got suckered into the trade because it allowed them to look virtuous. And now no one can find the exit door, and you can't really walk back all of your praise for sustainability up until now. And the risk between now and 2030 is that financial regulations are coming that's going to make this whole system mandatory in this country, particularly in Europe too.
And do they do so? Well, let's name some names. I mean, do you have a list of some of the big players here when we're talking the corporate world? I don't know if this is one of them. We've been talking a lot lately and bringing people on the things going on like at Boeing. And somebody said, well, Boeing became woke, one of my guests. That's just one. But I mean, kind of name some of the players that are hitting on ESG and really causing this problem.
Well, I think there are a number of examples, both in the business world and on Wall Street, of CEOs and companies that believe in this, and they're outspoken about it. So, you know, Disney, I think, Bud Light in the example, yeah. Target, you've seen that they've gotten a lot of pushback around their aggressive push of some of these progressive ideals. And then on Wall Street, you know, BlackRock has become a lightning rod because Larry Fink, the CEO, has been very outspoken about ESG investing. But for every CEO and company where, you know, they're run by someone who actually believes this, there are many more companies that are afraid to speak out against it. So they're going along because they're afraid that if you don't, you become the next target. And that's the other thing about ESG. It works as a totalitarian system. So anyone who doesn't stick with the program becomes the next target. You know, either for a bad headline or a protest at your headquarters. There are a number of different levers that they can pull to pressure a company. And now obviously that's not an investment, you know, strategy. It doesn't hang together. It's basically a very coercive system. And I think we need to acknowledge that in order to come up with a way to like reverse this.
Well, aren't some company boards recognizing that it's a disaster? If we use, you mentioned Bud Light and that disaster, Target had a disaster. Or are those just the couple we're hearing about that kind of got caught in the most, the most extreme cases, or I don't even know if that's the right word. The light got shone on them and people didn't like what they were seeing. Are they reversing course? Because that's some of what people have been saying recently. The ESG movement's been losing steam because of instances like this and companies, you know, going woke and going broke. Or is that just, are they just morphing this into another name and they're still doing it under the surface?
Yeah, I think, you know, for those that have walked back some of their public support, like BlackRock, it's a tactical retreat. You know, they're waiting for air cover from the regulators.
Yeah.
When, you know, then they don't have to worry about being a specific target. And for some of the companies that have, you know, lost revenue and market share, they're not backing away from it. I mean, Bud Light's a good example where, you know, even with all of the mistakes they made a year ago now, around, you know, hooking up with, that's not probably the best phrase, Dylan Mulvaney around marketing. For, you know, and this is a company that, you know, for decades was pitch perfect when it came to marketing, and was an American brand. And they kind of just blew that up with that poor decision. But a year later, they still haven't been able to really walk that back and do what they need to right the ship.
Yeah.
And I think that's partly because they have a European parent, and ESG is very strong over in Europe. But also because, again, you have to agree with every tenet of the progressive ESG agenda. And if you don't, you become a target. And I think what they're more worried about is, you know, even though this brand is cratering, they're going to lose financial market access. And that's really the threat around ESG. You know, if you don't comply, you're going to be shut off from the market.
Yeah, but then I guess it's the activist board members and activist shareholders that get a hold of the funds that direct it to them, that they just don't seem to care. I mean, you mentioned a huge, hedge fund that with BlackRock. I mean, I would imagine they care about profits, right? Or is the ideals that they're pushing, is that over profit at this point in this world? Or are they is it something deeper? Get into that.
Yeah, I mean, there's enough. There are grifters around this entire trade. But there's enough money to be made to kind of grease the wheels here. So, you know, if you want to raise a sustainability fund, label it as such,
yeah,
you'll be able to charge extra fees for that, right? So there are, even though, you know, your performance there is probably not going to do much better than the market, if at all. So, you know, there are ways that, and then obviously all the service providers around this, they can come up with their own ESG scores and ratings and proxy advice. So there's enough money to be made by enough of a dominant minority here to keep the process going. But eventually it will restrict your investment universe. It just has to, because the whole goal of ESG is to, you know, direct capital away from certain industries, starting with oil and gas,
okay,
and heavy industry, and directing it towards, you know, favored industries and companies, starting with green energy. So eventually it will restrict your universe, but I think at the end of the day, it doesn't matter for many of them. And again, it's so coercive that, you know, no one wants to speak out about that obvious fact. And no matter how many companies go broke focusing on ESG and the so-called woke agenda, it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, you point out the obvious, like last year with Silicon Valley Bank going, you know, away because mm-hmm. they mismanaged the interest rate risk because they were too focused on diversity, equity, inclusion. And it doesn't challenge the overriding thesis, right? So, you know, the promise is that it's going to create financial value over the longer term. And no matter how many companies go broke over the short term, it's not going to change the activists from pushing it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter to them. I can see that. And folks were talking with the author of The Race to Zero, How ESG Investing Will Crater the Global Financial System, Paul Tice. I can see that just like in, let me just divert us to another topic a little bit, our school system. We pulled our kids out of a school system because we got notifications about DEI and all diversity, equity, inclusion, all that stuff. They just went wild and bonkers, right? And we're like, look, we want our kids to know how to do math and read and this and that. So we pulled our kids out. And they never even asked us why. They didn't even care. And they've lost hundreds and hundreds of kids in the local public school system, right, Paul? But they don't care. They keep going with the crazy policies. Last week we were talking about sex ed policies with these school districts, and they're talking about getting rid of the use of the word boys and girls. So even when they're losing, in this case, customers, which are the families, the students, they keep going forward. So it sounds like the same thing with the people that are on this really leftist quest in the corporate world.
Yeah, I think it's all about control, you know, political control, economic control. And if they do succeed in defunding fossil fuels, that will give, you know, the people pushing this, the activists, and then the governments behind it, basically control over every American's life, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if you can reduce everyone's everyday transactions to how much carbon does emit, you can control everything, right? You know, whether you can own a car, how far you can drive, whether you can fly. And then the technology that we have right now allows them, just like in China, financially to monitor every transaction you have. So it's a fairly dystopian scenario going forward, but it's all about controlling everyone. And the other scenario, which will be very negative for the markets, is that if energy prices, if energy supply is constrained, prices obviously will go up. Food prices and everything else will go up. So it's going to make the inflation of the last 2 years look like child's play.
Yeah.
And no one ever talks about why that macro scenario is supposedly going to be good for the financial markets. I mean, it can't. The transition that's being forced away from fossil fuels can't be completed right now. It's not driven by the market or technology. It's being driven by politicians. And we're already getting signs in Europe and here about what's going to go wrong over the coming years.
Yeah, I don't think people realize the amount of diesel and fossil fuels it takes to get the food to your table, how many hundreds of miles it goes, but just the planting process, the fertilizers, you name it. And you've seen, especially you mentioned Europe, and this is where this stuff starts. I was just over in Europe a few weeks ago, actually, and what's going on in places like Italy is maybe a sign of what will be here in about 10 years. It's insane. It takes a lot of fossil fuels, and they have this dream that by 2030, we're going to be running, I don't know, tractors by electric, planes by electric. I think they know that's a bunch of BS. You say that there's going to be an iron curtain of sustainability if we don't do something here by, you're shooting for 2030. That, is this like a point of no return, or what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, if you look at the timetable of the other side, and you know, the knee-jerk reaction is always to discount it because they've been so wrong up until now. So we've been hearing about the end of the world from the climate side for years now, and they've always been wrong. But you know, this net zero by 2050 includes a number of important 2030 targets, right? And if you look at ESG and sustainable development and climate, they all have 2030 milestones, right? So I think we need to focus on what they hope to accomplish now in 2030, and it's a fairly dire scenario. I mean, in the U.S., you know, we've committed to, under the Biden administration, illegally, I would argue, we've committed to reducing our emissions by 40 to 45% between now and 2030 versus an 05 baseline. In Europe, it's 55%. You know, if we succeed in that, it's going to lead to less economic growth, lower living standards, more poverty, and higher mortality rates. So I think we need to take the other side at their word that this is what they're going to try and accomplish. And you can see all of the different ways that they're trying to push it forward. I mean, we're banning internal combustion vehicles in this country, in many states, as well as the federal level, by 2032.
Yeah.
That's not that far off. That will kick in by 2027. And it's my personal opinion that the body language from the other side, particularly the UN, is that there's going to be the declaration of a global climate emergency, most likely by 2025. And then that will give them kind of pandemic type emergency powers. And then we'll see when the gloves are off what they're willing to do.
And what people are willing to put up with, Paul. I mean, I was shocked during COVID at what people put up with. I mean, that seemed like a perfect test case there. Hey, if we tell you to stay home, will you stay home? Or will you do this or that? And people did it.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, it didn't take a lot for a lot of people to also, you know, be forced to take a vaccine as well.
No, right? I mean, it did it quick.
That was a test case, I think. And then we'll have to see. The other problem, too, is that since the other side's been at her for 40 years, and, you know, I would argue that the first pillar of society that fell was colleges and schools back in the 80s, you know, the next two generations have been indoctrinated in this climate emergency scaremongering tactics, right? So, you know, they kind of believe it. So there may be a lot of people who don't really push back when things start to get tough. You know, so, you know, I just think the regulations are going to get more draconian between now and 2030. And I think we need to be aware of that and be more aggressive. This is going to be a very important election year, both in this country as well as others, with regard to the whole ESG agenda.
Yeah, but do you think that the bureaucratic state and the administrative state is so thick in there that, like, let's say Trump gets back in and he does go, can he even go through and fire these people, stop these people from just waving a pen? They're not even doing it through Congress anymore. They're just dictating these things. I mean, is there even the hope at this point that anyone can come up against that system that's so ingrained and so big and so powerful?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to be hopeful that we can turn around, yeah. But a second Trump administration needs to be much more aggressive when it comes to climate and ESG than the first one was. It's not good enough just to stop the forward momentum. He has to push back on it and dismantle all of these regulations that I would argue have been passed through non-democratic means. Mm-hmm. And that starts with taking the Paris Agreement, submitting it to the Senate for approval like it should have been done. It will never pass there because you need a supermajority, and then that should undercut all the climate-related regulations that we have in this country.
All right, Paul. Hey, best way for people to get in touch with you, I've got encounterbooks.com. The book is The Race to Zero. Is that the best way? Is that where people can buy the book?
You can buy it there on any Amazon or okay. any book retailer. Yeah, okay. You can reach me, you know, through LinkedIn and Twitter.
Okay. Yeah. I think this is really important because I don't think people are so distracted nowadays, Paul. It's really sad. I mean, I was talking earlier about, you know, people are blocking the San Francisco bridge to protest what's going on in Gaza and, you know, and in the Middle East, but they're not paying attention here to the debt and this ESG stuff. The amount the federal government's spending. I don't know if it's that people are completely overwhelmed with everything that's being thrown at them. Let me get this as your final thoughts. Or is it they're just unaware of this? Are they blocking it out? I mean, what's going on with America where they're just not awake to this stuff or woke to this stuff and out there protesting in mass?
Yeah, I think the other side by design is trying to overwhelm the American public, I think. You know, so it's one thing after another. And inflation hasn't gone away.
No.
Even though the markets are looking for a rate cut at this point. So I think everyday Americans have enough on their plate just to keep going. So even if you're invested in the market, you know, a lot of this is less than transparent. And I think some people may be discarding ESG as just the latest skirmish in the culture wars. I think that would be the wrong thing to do because I think this is different with regard to going after fossil fuels. So, but, you know, with the problems on the border, with crime and everything else, you know, there's a lot to focus on, especially if you have young children still in the school system,
yeah.
where you have to deal with a lot of this stuff, as you mentioned. I think it's the requirement of lawmakers, particularly Republicans, at the state level to keep the charge going. This will require government resources to mount this legal challenge. And the red states have done a good job with that. They need to keep that going. And I think just Americans need to pressure their lawmakers to push back on all of this because, again, we're going to reach a point fairly soon where it may become irreversible.
Yeah. Okay. Like so many things going on in our country. And I think you're dead on. Get in touch with your representatives, especially at the legislature in your state, because that tends to have some impact. And I think D.C., with the exception of a very few at this point, has really become a lost cause. I'm not saying give up completely, but I don't think they're listening. Where your state rep, you may still run into them at the local store and might still have some impact. So, all right. Hey, I appreciate it. Again, the book is The Race to Zero with Paul Tice, How ESG Investing Will Crater the Global Financial System. Hey, you have a good day.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate it.
All right. Appreciate it. And love to hear from you. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. Go ahead and send in a comment. Going to get to some of those comments here after the break, plus hit on a few other things, maybe more tax day rants. I don't know. But before I do that, hey, don't forget to write down this number, save it in your phone, put it on your fridge, do whatever you got to do, because when your HVAC system goes out, my good buddies over at Gettles High Desert Mechanical. I can't even talk. I'm just tongue twisted. Gettles High Desert Mechanical, family owned company, been doing this for Northern and Central Arizona for decades. They work on my heater. They got our older HVAC system back up and running. They can take care of you too. Prescott, Sedona, Verde Valley, Flagstaff, Williams, you name it. They'll come on out and help you out. 928-567-2200. 928-567-2200. Or go to Gettles, G-O-E-T-T-L-S. GettlesHDM.com. Back in a minute. Hey, if you're listening to the podcast, please give us a great review and also give us a comment in there. If you're not listening to the podcast, subscribe. Look up the Jeff Horvitz Show. Also on video, Rumble, follow us there. And on YouTube, subscribe. We appreciate everyone who's done that.
You're listening to the Jeff Horvitz Show.
This portion of the show is brought to you by ZeroResNorthernArizona.com. You made it back. That's good. Olivia's back after one week being off and off to California. I saw the pictures. You did this school trip to California to go to different places, but you camped on the beach. And the first thing I saw when you sent me that picture of all the tents on the beach is I thought you were like volunteering at a homeless encampment.
What? No, don't listen to him. We had a really nice camp.
No, I'm just kidding.
We looked wonderful. It was right on the beach. It was super nice.
No, it's pretty cool. I mean, there's not a lot of times you get to sleep right on the beach with the waves crashing.
They were loud at night.
Yeah, nice.
I thought they were like coming, like it was like a tsunami or something. Like coming. Well, I hope that didn't
happen. Yeah, remember we drove on the Pacific Coast Highway up there and you come down in some spots and it's like tsunami warnings where they had the signs up really like, get to higher ground. Yeah, I always think about that one. You know when the water goes out, though, if it's like all of a sudden going out, it's time to run for the hills. Mm-hmm. Okay, you at least knew that. It was sketchy, though. This is what's really cool about the school that Olivia and Owen go to, Flagstaff Christian School, is they do an annual trip, right? For like above fifth grade or something like that, right?
Yeah, there's like a fifth through eighth trip, and then I was on the high school trip. This time they split like fifth and sixth and seventh and eighth. So everybody was there three different trips all at once.
Oh, wow. I don't even know how they coordinate that. It's hard enough for us coordinating a trip for four or five of us as a family.
There were 40 of us on the trip plus adults.
Whew. So, yeah, but you took got to experience a sailboat. I've never sailed, and something I would like to at least try or do. I've never even been on a sailboat. So
yeah,
you
and
guys
they had
out.
Us, like, doing it ourselves. I don't know what the group was called, but it was some group that's, like, meant to, like, teach students how to sail.
Okay. That's
so they
cool.
had us, like, raise the sails and...
The jib or something? Did they use the language? I don't even know what the
language
is.
Well, they, like, taught us, like, some of the language so we would know what they were talking about. No, I don't remember.
You climbed up the mast?
Mm-hmm, yeah, they...
This is sketchy, and I'm, like, rethinking about these trips.
Well, they're, like, just, like, popping out these harnesses suddenly, and it's not like there was, like, a rope ladder up to it. It was, like, a net. Like, they're just, like, a bunch of ropes everywhere, and they're just like, okay, you clip in when you get to the top.
Well, what about the...
So I was like, so the, like, 20-foot climb, just ignore that thing? But, yeah, I went up to the, we, like, all had a chance if we wanted to climb up to, like, the first level on the mast. And it was pretty windy when I was up there, but it was a lot of fun. I mean, I like climbing. I like rock climbing and stuff, so that was cool.
Yeah, I guess at least you're above the water, or were you above the deck? You would just crash into the deck or the water?
Well, we started over the water. Like, you had to climb over the side of the boat and then, like, climb up it, but then you were over the deck for a while. So that was interesting.
Things I don't want to know. Things you worry about as a parent.
I asked, and nobody has ever fallen.
You know, and I got one. I got Isabel, who's over, and she's finishing up. She'll be home in a couple weeks, finishing up exchange school in Greece. Mm-hmm. And the other morning, I get up, it's like 6 a.m. or so. I'm sitting there drinking some coffee, and I decide to text a picture to Isabel of the lazy dog with her legs hanging off the side of the couch, right? And I normally don't text anyone early in the morning or pictures, and Isabel usually calls like 6:37 because, you know, it's afternoon for her.
She
whatever.
Calls evening. Quite early.
Yeah, and we're just like, oh, I love you, but I just don't
you
know if we can talk
thing.
Right now.
Wow.
So I send her a picture, right, of the dog. And so we got kid over there, and then we had you guys over in California and Phoenix, and there's like people were everywhere. And she didn't respond to me. So I'm like, okay, that's fine. Then Angela gets up, and she's like checking her messages, her voicemail, right? And she gets a call from Greece, a Greek number, at 4 a.m. But the voicemail was all garbled, you know, jacked up. I just like went into panic mode, man. Right? Were you up? You weren't up.
I was in California.
You were in California. Okay. You guys are in California. She's in Greece. And I'm like, oh, what happened? So I'm texting Isabel. I was like, are you okay? And then I'm calling her. Like this was like, I was on total panic mode, right? And then Angela gets up and she's texts her. And I'm thinking the worst at this point, right? And then Isabel calls. She's like, calm down. I'm okay.
Yeah, poor
that
Isabel
wasn't
was
me.
Just like,
that wasn't
was
me.
I was out on the beach.
Yeah,
something.
She was out at some Greek island or something at a beach. And she's like, I'm okay. But you have the tracking apps nowadays, right? And I don't have her location on my phone, but I guess grandma does. And I think Angela does as well. But we didn't think about that. She was literally on the ferry when I was having this breakdown.
Yeah, that would not be
if I had tracked her at that point. It's like, oh no, Isabel's in the ocean. She's in the Aegean Sea. So yeah, it's just something that I guess my parents always used to tell me. It's like, you never stop worrying about your kids, and you guys cause me stress.
You're all welcome. Right.
Love to hear from you. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. Let's talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. Hey, something that causes me a lot of stress as well is taxes. I'll talk about that a little bit in just a minute. The economy, the nonstop spending that's going on. That's why I like to own a little bit of physical gold and silver. It's gone kind of crazy lately. I'm going to CNBC right now to get you a pretty up-to-date number here. Yeah, silver went up another 25 cents. It's getting close to $29 an ounce. Gold went up another 15, 20 today. Another, I don't know if that's a record, but it's getting close. Almost $2,400 an ounce for gold and silver. I buy my physical gold and silver at Desert Gold Exchange, an Arizona-based company. Justin and his family, they keep their overhead low. They pass those savings on to you. They do such a great job for people and filling them in on, you know, what's going on in the silver and gold and precious metals market. They also guarantee that they're going to keep that overhead low or keep your fees and commissions the lowest possible out there. So that way it's passed on to you. They guarantee that. Give them a call. If you've been on the fence on this for a while, isn't it time to look at this? I don't see things getting rosier. Do you? I don't know.
Not anytime soon,
pessimist
no.
here, but I want that insurance policy when it comes to owning physical gold and silver. 888-852-4343. Desert Gold Exchange at 888-852-4343 or go to desertgoldexchange.com. Okay, so I started to show off with this. It is tax day, April 15th. Sometimes that falls on a weekend. You get an extra day of depression. Record numbers last year of taxes were collected, but it still wasn't enough for the insatiable appetite of government. They're spending more. They're taking in more than ever before, and they're spending more. And then some. I mean, the national debt's almost $35 trillion.
Right. Not only do they have to buy the new stuff, but pay the old stuff off, and it's all too much.
It's all too much. Yeah, we're going to be paying that old. Your kids' kids will be paying.
Kids will be
paying off this. So the Bidens reported. What, you know, their tax report is, or tax returns made public, I guess. They reported gross adjusted income of $619,000, just over almost $620,000 for 2023. What's the president get paid? A couple hundred thousand?
Something like that? I thought it was like $200,000 or $400,000 a year. I think $200,000.
Something like that. Okay. All right. That's fine. They paid an effective federal income tax rate of 23.7%. I don't know. I mean, they always argue that everybody's got to pay their fair share. Shouldn't they be paying like 90? Anyway, Vice President Harris, I don't want that. We don't want that kind of tax rate, right? Vice President Harris and her husband, reported federal adjusted gross income of $450,000, and they paid, I don't know if they're paying their fair share, Olivia, 19.7% federal tax. So 19.7% effective rate. So there you go. That's what they're paying. I paid today. Angela wrote a check. She did all painful. That stuff. It's just painful because you see what they're doing with the money, and it just gets, it gets pretty depressing. Did you?
Yeah, it's like, at least I know this is going to a good cause.
Yeah, not. Yeah. Did you file? Hey, if the IRS is listening.
Not exactly.
I saw you make something this year. I don't know. Didn't you do sold cookies or something? There, you're on the radar. They will raid nowadays.
I just like made the cookies. Like, you could have sold them or something.
I could have sold them. Then now that they're looking for cookies on the, you know, on the tax return. All right, let's see. Liz Archuleta, you may recognize that name. She was a county board supervisor for Coconino County for, I don't know, like ever. I think it was 20 years, but I can't even remember anymore. She's the one, actually, when you hear me talking about, she's no longer county board of supervisor. I think she's like president of United Way of Northern Arizona or something like that. She just got appointed to the Arizona Board of Regents. This is the body that oversees the three public universities, NAU, ASU, U of A. And, you know, especially U of A has had their problems. They were short $100+ million in their budget. So Katie Hobbs, she appoints these people, and I assume she's filling spots up that probably do see the Republican before her were filling. So she has put in Liz Archuleta, former county supervisor, and then she went to D.C. for a while, did something with the Biden administration, and then she came back. So I don't know. I guess it didn't take or whatever. I don't know. It's just, I get kind of sick of the same names. I don't have anything personally against her. It just seems like, who's the guy that was was it the Speaker of the House, McCarthy? He landed at some think tank. Oh, no. You know who landed at a think tank? The girl who was running against Trump in the primary. What's her name? You remember her name? I can't even remember. This is like a month ago. But she got a job. No idea. She got a job at a think tank.
Uh-huh.
And some people are yelling at their speaker right now. They're like, I know the name.
It's so obvious.
How can you? I can't remember because I shove too much in this head every day, right? No, but she got a think tank job already, like the Hudson Institute or something. So here's my point. And she's a Republican, Liz Archuleta. I don't know what she is. I think she was a Democrat, but I don't know what she is now. I haven't checked. It just seems like these people just always are in something. Right? They're always in something.
Involved in just whatever.
Go do something else.
Useful.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I'm not even going to say that. I don't know. I mean, I had my issues with United Way in the past, and I'm not going to rehash all that, but it's like, I don't know. They just always seem like they're in the public sphere of money forever. You know, I don't know why we have to be. Isn't it just like, do a few years and then go back to whatever it was you were doing before? You know, like, they never get out. Why would they get out? And I'm not relating her or the girl we can't remember who ran for president against Trump. We should remember that.
The girl who ran for president.
We should remember that name,
that sounds
right?
Important. I don't even know.
Yeah, but, okay, I mean, why don't members of Congress, you know, leave? And Glenn Beck had a good thing on this, on his podcast, by the way. I think that's well worth listening to. But the amount of money that they make in their stock picks, talking members of Congress, like how they come in and they're worth like $8 and they leave and they're worth tens of millions of dollars.
That's not suspicious.
You know, some of them up like 200% in a year. Why? Because they're such geniuses. No, they got insider information, right? And it's just like people get in government, they just don't get out. I don't know what to do about it. I don't know how to fix that. And you see it on a day like this, April 15th, tax day, Olivia, and you're like, well, we're funding so much dead weight in this country. You know, do we need all these different departments, these different organizations, these different...
There's a department frustrating for like
everything.
Anything you could even think of.
Everything. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, round and round we go. So let's see. What else do I have here for you? I'm watching the Baltimore Bridge, Francis Scott Key Bridge. Remember that got hit by the barge and then collapsed?
Yeah.
I told you I was going to keep an eye That's on this right. for the whole way through, just because we never follow a story to its... you know, terminal point.
Yeah, more information later.
Yeah, it's like, more information. No, we forget about it. Well, the They pulled out the fourth victim was recovered from the waters there. So and there were six total, and they're now launching a probe and a criminal probe the feds against the ship or the captain of that ship or whatever, which I think you got to do because was there anything there? You know, was it strictly a stupid accident? Was the guy competent? Was the guy up on his training or this or that? So I will keep watching that one for you as well. Let's see. One of local concern, Coconino National Forest, I think today, maybe it was yesterday, they started reopening roads in the National Forest. So that's good. I mean, snow's melted. There's still some closed because some of them are mud pits and you don't want to get the tire tracks.
You see something closed and you're just like, that's gone forever.
Is it
because they tend to close and never reopen?
Will it reopen? That's always our concern. I always love the ones, you know, we've closed this trail or road for, unique species of plants or something, or and soil erosion. I'm like, there's still a weed, man.
It's like, that could die out and I would not care.
Yeah, I mean, some of these things might need to go.
It's like the goat thorn.
Oh, the goat thorn. That is an invasive species. It. Yeah, that came from the Mediterranean, from Greece. Yeah, I was...
Isabel, wipe your shoes.
Somebody came over from Greece with these goat thorns. I bought a goat thorn roller by the advice of a listener last year. It works okay. But I think I found a more effective way to remove the goat thorns. You know what those are? They're these, like, 12-headed spiky things that you can't burn. The only thing left after a nuclear war are cockroaches and goat thorns. And they maintain it. You can't burn them. Once they're in, they get in your shoes.
Right, you walk through the field, and oh my goodness.
It is a train wreck. So I'm laying down some stuff, and I'm putting down some underlayment, weed guard stuff, right? To stop the weeds from growing up through the 6 inches of mulch I'm putting
Which
up, right?
Which doesn't work.
I know, but it's a bad habit that doesn't end, right? So that's why I'm doing like 6 to 12 inches of mulch. I'm like, I hope nothing grows up through this, especially these goat thorns. I get down on all four to kind of stretch out the under layment for the landscape material. The goat thorns just go through my knees, my hands, like right through that fabric, that material. And I was just, I'm still picking out these goat thorns. They're the worst thing.
Well, and then
world.
You picked it up.
And there's millions of them. So anyway, just if you need to get rid of goat thorns and get rid of them, don't let them grow. Don't let them spread and don't drive over them because they will spread everywhere. I know from experience.
We'll all be better off if
we'll
they
be
die
better
out.
Off. Yeah. roll out some plastic or something and it picks them right up. It's just gnarly. It's just a really wicked thing.
Well,
anyway,
and they also make you numb if you,
it's like
a numbing thing.
Satan's plant here, you know, thorns. I think there's biblical, references to the thorns, right? Olivia somewhere in there. Yeah. Thorns. And yeah. Okay. Anyway, where was I going with this? Oh, yeah. Coconino National Forest opens roads up. There's still some closed, but, you know, a lot of these roads are opening back up, Forest Service roads, plus firewood permits are open for sale now. So you can start getting firewood. And I'd get some firewood because the way that things are blowing up in the Middle East and the way that our government, as Paul Tice was talking about last segment, you know, they want to get rid of fossil fuels and everything. So having the ability to burn some wood... Maybe a good
your
idea.
Rip-off bundle of four pieces of wood for $10 is going to become a rip-off bundle of a piece of wood for like $50.
Yeah, you guys brought some wood over there for fires and stuff. I don't think you're allowed to. Oh. Invasive wood. But because they sell them for $10 for a little bundle.
I don't know.
If you need a fire
it,
for...
We burned it off.
If you need a fire for the weekend, just call me. Don't buy that $10 bundle, please. It hurts every time I walk by those and see those. It's like one log split and it's $10. Uh-huh. All right. Hey, get your insurance re-quoted or re-bid out with my good friends over at Eric Boatner Allstate Agency in Flagstaff. They saved us a ton of money. Go to them. I mean, this is something worth looking at least once a year. Your homeowners, your vehicles and things like that. Call them up. Ask them if they have goat thorn insurance.
That's just mess, the top thing you need.
Just mess with them. Goat thorn insurance because they could cause injury and severe depression. 928-774-8722. Eric Boatner, Allstate Agency, 928-774-8722. You made me happy.
Thank you.
you're listening to the podcast, please give us a great review and also give us a comment in there. If you're not listening to the podcast, subscribe. Look up The Jeff Horvitz Show. Also on video, Rumble, follow us there. And on YouTube, subscribe. We appreciate everyone who's done that.
This is The Jeff Horvitz Show.
I thought there was some important information in that last segment.
I didn't say there wasn't. I said that whenever you or mom are listening to the radio, you're flipping through like, oh, nobody cares about that stupid thing. And I was like, better hope you aren't a hypocrite.
And then what did I say during the break? This was a good one.
Well, yeah, it's about real stupid stuff. They're like, you have to do it in your voice.
Yeah, I pride myself on accuracy and trying to get the numbers right. Although earlier with the taxes and stuff, I was like, does it really matter anymore? You know, they just, we're broke. And I was like, yeah, 9 out of 5 people like cats.
As an example of stupid things, and he didn't even realize. Yeah, accuracy. 9 out of 5, everyone.
Today's podcast title, 9 out of 5 people love cats.
Somehow I doubt that's
need
true.
To think on that overnight. All right. Hey, yeah, I'll have a good night. We'll be back here tomorrow. I don't know what's going to happen between now and then, so I won't even predict what we're talking about tomorrow, but
good
we'll have stuff and guests. And I hope you
there
all
will be something.
Have a great night. Take care. See you soon. The information provided on the Jeff Horvitz Show does not constitute legal, medical, financial, or tax advice. All information is the opinions of the host and guests. You should always seek the advice of a professional regarding any of these complex issues to make sure all circumstances of your situation are properly considered. Hey, if you're listening to the podcast, please give us a great review and also give us a comment in there. If you're not listening to the podcast, subscribe. Look up The Jeff Horvitz Show. Also on video, Rumble, follow us there. And on YouTube, subscribe. We appreciate everyone who's done that.
This is The Jeff Horvitz Show.